Midweek Drive Morning Edition, designed by Alex Lefchuk to be the ideal tonic to a challenging Wednesday in LA.
Yes, although we appreciate that back in Los Angeles it is indeed the morning time now. Don't worry about it, it's just time. It's in a whole different world. What time, for instance, is it in Nashville, Cameron?
It is 11:02 a.m. Central.
Ah, there we are, 11:02. It is morning in Nashville. I have in my hand, as proven this morning, as released on The Breakfast Show, the nominations. The nominations are a white envelope with nominations on it. This is very exciting, this, because we have decided that there will be an award this year. We, of course, being actually, it's not even a sister station. This is why I was explaining yesterday. It's not, for, if people worry, saying, why wasn't my show on there? Why wasn't I nominated? This is for the Midweek Drive. Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition, because it was actually through a lady who said, you know, well, she passed away a wee while ago, but her name was Hilda, and Hilda Ayres was her full name, and she donated a significant sum, you know, to Southside Broadcasting to keep us going and all the rest of its pieces. But in honour, we have had a semi-regular award, of which, of course, last year, even though she's never held the trophy, Hannah O'Brien was the recipient. I am now going to pass. Are you watching this on camera? I mean, this is very good. I'm passing the nominations over to Jill Hart. So in true Academy Award-winning style, and bear in mind Katie Grimason is listening to this, would you like to read out the nominations for the 2013 Contributor of the Year to the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition, formerly Rookie of the Year, but we're taking Contributor of the Year. Jill?
And the nominations are Cameron Tilbury.
Cameron Tilbury, just say Cameron Tilbury, nominated purely and simply because he's been there consistently bringing us the very best in top music from Nashville. He might be outside the country, he might be in Nashville, he might be a Canadian with Maple Star Music and Media, but he has been nominated. He has been there, you know?
Wow, it's an honour just to be nominated.
Yeah, exactly.
Also nominated, yes. We have Sarah Bullimore.
Sarah Bullimore, yes. Yay, Sarah, who effectively snuck in because of her fantastic work on Lincoln Inspired and heaps of other arts festivals. And she's a fairly regular contributor to the show, of course. So in many ways, she's kind of, Jill, you've been keeping her seat warm for her
I have.
You know, there we are. So Sarah Bullimore, also nominated.
Also nominated, yes. We have Katie Grimason.
KTG has been nominated as a Contributor of the Year for the Midweek Drive. Yes.
And she is just a winner because she is the pride of the West Country.
Well, we'd like to say Birmingham, I would have thought, in terms
West
of
Midlands, yes,
West Midlands, yes. Really. I mean, you know, Katie doing her sort of reports for Radio Warwickshire with, get off my land, my dear. Hello, my lovelies. It's not the KTG we've come to appreciate.
Also nominated is Ed Wellman.
Ed Wellman. Ed has been nominated. He is in the pool for Contributor of the Year for a whole stack of scenarios that he's been putting together. Yes.
Also nominated is Phil Lyonis.
Phil Lyonis. Also, if Lily Holliman is listening to what to date has been Phil Lyonis doing fantastic stuff, but he's been a bit poorly recently. It's not for that. It's not for his illness that he's been nominated. It's just because, again, like yourself, Cameron, he's been part of the whole family and team from that point of view.
So it's not a pity vote.
Actually, to be fair, it's not a vote. I have the other envelope, which will be decided when Lily Holliman actually draws it in the end of the sort of production, really. So that has to go into lock and key. Or equivalent from that point of view. It's exciting, isn't it, Jill?
It's very exciting.
One of those five will actually be the recipient, in fact, of plastic bag. Yeah, no, actually more than that. more than that. I'll just give you a little peek here.
The beginnings of a trophy.
Of a trophy will be there.
Wow.
Much like Wimbledon, it'll be a case of a general parade round and then we'll take it back for next year. But yes, I don't think even Hannah O'Brien actually got her hands on the trophy, but there we are. That's exciting stuff. It's almost as exciting as this week's musical choice, Cameron, which you have obviously brought to us courtesy of Maple Star Music and Media. And I've got to say, this is a very poppy tune by Raquel Wachal.
Raquel Wachal.
Yes.
She's been really busy. So far this year, she had a song called Leaving Home, which placed in the top 30 of the Music City Songwriting Competition here in Nashville. And some big-time judges there, Little Big Town, hit songwriter Tim Nichols, who's written for Kenny Chesney, Brad Paisley, Tim McGraw, and others. She had a song picked in USA Today, which is a national newspaper, to go on their May 13th edition of Playlist. And she's placed in the top 10 of British Columbia, Canada's elite annual variety clubs. Variety Got Talent show this year, featured on a TV show as well. This past Sunday, she showcased on the main stage at the Canadian Organization of Campus Activities annual national conference in Halifax, Nova Scotia. She is a recent high school graduate and a real talent. She's been causing some waves down here in Nashville with her songwriting skills, and I hope you're really going to enjoy it.
Hold it there for the moment. I know this is why he's been nominated. He's so good at this, but I've got to ask the question: is this good music to listen to for Nikki Wells, who's off to get her fish and chip dinner in the car?
I think it is. I think I can picture Nikki just kind of bopping along there.
Well, she's the safe driver, so we've heard. So that's good news. Nikki, I think she was in the sort of honorable mentions we might have been putting up for that. But there's so many. Listen, even if you haven't been nominated, if you've been part of the Midweek Drive team, this is the part of the year where we salute you in every sense of the word. Anyway, it's over to you. I know the big build-up was there, and I kind of took your thunder away. So go, take it again.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome this brand new song by Raquel Warchall. This is You're Gonna Have To on Siren FM.
So, Jill, from the perspective of Lincoln Inspired with whiteboards and squeaky pens and such like stuff, she's not listening, is she?
She's not.
I mean, you know, she might be nominated. She won't even know she's been nominated unless Ed has tweeted her or sent things down. It's the sad thing, really, when you get to that sort of stage. You don't even know you've been nominated. What did you make of Raquel?
I thought it was very pleasant. Yes, very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. The sort of thing you'd be sort of humming along to as you're setting the stall out in Waterstones for another joyous day.
You never know. You never know, Alex.
Exactly. I know you Waterstones girls. You sort of just do the
we don't have music anymore. You
party
know.
Time.
It's the world now in bookstores is not music, which is very interesting.
No music. Is that because they didn't pay the PBL fees?
Probably.
Musicians, we like to support them, don't we, Cameron?
We do.
Yes. Ed, what did you make of that classy little number, You're Gonna Have To?
I thought a winning bass riff and kind of Shania Twain-esque as well on top.
See, I wouldn't have gone there.
I don't know. Several people had, including Jeff Mott Lang. Oh, I shouldn't have actually said that at this time of the day, but never mind. Yes, life continues. It's the excitement, that sort of thing. I mean, initially, I thought a bit Taylor Swifty as well, really, from that point of view. But nevertheless, we'd be more than happy to feature on the programme. And in fact, it's time we started getting those fine folk there. We're paving the way, of course, for next week. The Great Yorkshire Show will be featured in force. We continue with all manner of things, heading off to Arthur Weingarten and Annette Andre. As mentioned, we've got Rachel Werby. This woman is a phenomenon, as I'm sure you will have found out, Ed, having had a look at her perusal.
Did he have two pages of her CV in sort of nine-point type?
If we talk about being guest conductor and West Virginia's first lady, guest conductor for the Los Angeles Philharmonic, the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, the London Philharmonic Orchestra, close relationships with Jesse Norman, Patty Austin, Norman Lear, founder of Musique, a phenomenon, basically. And Rachel will be on in the second part of the programme just after 6 o'clock, just after Michelle Monroe. I think Alan Stevens might be squeezing some stuff in betwixt times. It's his way. And Lily Holliman, of course, is stepping gamely into the Phil Leonis feature, possibly to actually sort of... I mean, it'd be interesting, isn't it? If Phil Leonis doesn't win, how is Lily going to take that? because it's, you know, you see those Oscar photos. I mean, we haven't actually got webcams on all our five candidates, mainly because I don't think Sarah Bullimore was actually up for being followed around by the webcam. But it'd be nice to get that sort of, because you always get the shot of the anticipation. And they pretend not to care, but they do, don't they? You know?
It's almost like if you watch Top Gear and everybody, you know, the celebrities doing their race, their lap. Mm. They all pretend not to care, but then when it comes down to the time, everybody's on the edge of their seat.
If only Katie Grimmison had actually been here to celebrate, you know, who knows? Oh, perhaps I've given too much away there, I don't know. Yes.
Should I actually go and put on, you know, a tie?
Well, I think you should have the speech. Keep the speech to hand, you see, because, okay. You know, I mean, I don't know. Can you see who's won through that?
My X-ray vision does not help me, though.
Ed,
I can't see anything. It's white.
And is there a bottle of champagne around with it?
There should be.
There should be. I'll go and buy some. Because anything to do with this show inspires drinking, really.
Yeah, okay. I won't go any further other than to ask Ed to throw those last two interrogatives your way, such as what's the traffic like in Lincoln and have you got any traffic and travel updates? Because apparently we do that regularly. Anyway, carry on.
That aside, Cameron, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this afternoon?
I have.
That was said with surety. I like that. And can we look forward to connecting with you again this time next week?
Another absolute surety? Yes, you can.
You're a good man. Thank you. I did my best to notice when the call came down the line. Are we human? Or are we dancer? Are we human? Or are we dancer?
And no comments about wearing tutus.
The Addams Family. Wonder Woman. The Green Hornet. Bonanza. Murder, She Wrote. The Mod Squad. Honey West. Ironside. Just some of the series which have benefited from the writing and producing genius of Arthur Weingarten. And now the legendary writer is live on the Midweek Drive. Prepare to be amazed.
Somehow I don't think even Orson Welles could have actually done that ident any better, Arthur. I mean, yeah, he clearly would have had the focus on the importance of your position within the whole thing. But, you know, we like to feel as though we get the message across.
It's beautifully done, I have to tell you.
Well, there you are now. Welcome back aboard the Midweek Drive, Arthur, and it's our little award-winning show here. I say award-winning, we've won nothing as far as I'm aware, but we actually are making an award to some of our contributors. Amazingly, neither yourself nor Annette actually made the shortlist this year, but I can only imagine that due to some oversight we'll get you put right for 2014. But, Jill, would you like to just read the nominations again, because we hear that
I
one
will.
Of them has actually started listening as well.
Marvellous,
okay?
The nominations are... Cameron Tilbury.
Yes, our Nashville correspondent.
Sarah Bullimore.
Our Lincoln-inspired and arts correspondent, who indeed is listening, we gather.
Katie Grimmison.
Yes, based in Birmingham.
Ed Wellman.
In the studio.
And Phil Leonis.
Phil Leonis in Los Angeles, but a bit poorly. Yeah. One of those, Arthur, will be picking up a trophy.
Sorry, who's Katie Grimmison?
Please.
No.
Our West Midlands correspondent.
Oh,
but
yes.
Arthur, from your own point of view, awards, do they make any difference? Do they help the motivation at all? Did you come Academy Award and Emmy Award winning season? Did you think, why do we have them? Or is it just good industry practice?
You have them so that you can employ PR and advertising people.
Excellent. That's
about the depth and breadth of it.
And I trust the nominees will appreciate the white envelopes that we've already provided.
That's excluding yours. Yours, you see, goes on the provenance of talent and intelligence. Mm. The others I were talking about was what we all know to be the Academy Award.
Well, there we are. You see,
BAFTA. Yeah. I will not leave BAFTA.
You see, that's why you're a regular, Arthur. You have deep powers of perception. That's critical in terms of the whole thing. So what's the weather like in Woodstock?
Well, I'll tell you right now, the Adams family would have to turn on some lights. It's so gloomy, I can't.
Really?
We've been having a series of thunderstorms that, you know, deliver promise and no rain, and then it gets dark, and then for, oh, I'd say about 15 minutes, the sun comes out, and it looks like Iceland thereafter. Yeah.
Well, it's summer in the Northern Hemisphere. Welcome aboard. And, of course, remember, now we've been past Midsummer's Day, and we've had the longest day of the year. The nights start drawing in, so it's very important you
That's
get those
right.
things together.
But look at this. Already, you see, you should strike off a good award. So far, day three of Wimbledon and no rain.
Exactly. Yes, sorry. We had another message from Sarah Bullimore. She's going crazy with the whole thing now. We've had Nikki Wells saying it's going to be a tough call. Hashtag awards. Sarah Bullimore, I'm sat working. Well, she always is, bless her. You know,
she
that's
is.
The important
she
thing.
Is.
You know,
she works hard.
Very good. I mean, the fact that we weren't invited to her jamboree barbecue to actually celebrate Lincoln Inspired and think about next year.
You'd have been given work, Alex.
She's been tuned in from the start, and she's exciting.
It's exciting. Very good.
Oh yeah, it's always nice to sort of share that. I'm putting together the calendar for next year, selecting those images, so we're gradually getting things together. But over to yourself, Jill Hart. Any questions for Arthur Weingarten?
Well, the list that you've just that was read out
the
at
Adams
the beginning.
Family.
Yes, it's a
Murder She Wrote.
It's my youth in a. In it's the television screen, isn't it?
Wonder Woman. Arthur Weingarten's material has captured, encapsulated Jill Hart's youth, forever encapsulated in a cathode ray tube. So what questions would you like to ask Arthur about any of those shows?
I mean, over here, they are part of our... They've almost become part of our culture over here. You know, it's such a list.
Life without Wonder Woman in the
1970s.
And the Man from U.N.C.L.E. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, you hit on something, and this is always amazing to me and to other people of my age and genre. We were so unaware of that those 60s, as Annette was when she was doing all those shows, The Saint and the Avengers and Randall and Hopkirk, all of us working at that time, and Roger Moore has said this, and other people, unaware of the show's impact around the world, not only at that time, because you could say, all right, currency can work. They were good and different and all that. But that 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, there'd be the awareness and continued growth. I mean,
and we still
example,
have the affection, I think, for those things, the memory of it and the affection for it. So I don't think probably we do for shows now.
No, I was just going to say that, and this has got absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I was involved with those and I'm not involved with now. It's, I think, a mystery to everyone who, one, earns their living or thinks and reads and watches about these kind of things. But it's a mystery why that then, and really not now, it's pretty disposable, even Sopranos. It has a wonderful viewership around the world, and then it's supplanted with something else very quickly. Not those shows. Annette Weekly gets fan mail in the dozens, and her pictures are constantly in demand for autographs. I find it amazing. It's just amazing.
I'm minded, actually, of the notion that was once sung about by, could it be Gladys Knight, who said, someday these will be the good old days, and we'll look forward and try to remember the 5th of September and all the rest. I take Jill's point, I take your point, Arthur. I think there was a magic. Maybe it's because actually you were the first, you were pioneers in many ways of producing good quality television, and we had producers there who didn't put things through a focus group. They actually genuinely took a chance, and they said, look, okay, it's a story about a detective and his partner. His partner's dead. He happens to be a ghost, though, and we've got a fantastic secretary, and it's called Randall and Hopkirk deceased, and you might sort of think that might not go these days, but they took a chance. Is that perhaps the sort of notion?
Exactly. And then when they tried the remake with Amelia Fox, it died a death within the third episode. It was gone.
Amelia Fox is a lovely lady, but she's not a patch on Annette Andre. I've said that time and time again.
that wasn't No, that wasn't that.
It's a fact, no. Arthur. And the media's got to live with it. You know, that's the baseline.
But, you know, I'll tell you, there is something, and I don't know if you know about this. There was a book that was done, a large-sized, oversized, elephant folio-sized photo book called The Birds of Britain that Annette was in, as was Judy Gleason and Julie Christie and Sue Lloyd, everybody who was in it, Lulu, the Carnaby Street people, everybody. In the 60s, two guys photographed these gorgeous women, accomplished women, actresses and models.
Of course, Arthur, as we're well aware, you would not get away with a title called Birds of Britain now. And you know, it's
no,
a very
really
60s trendy not. Scenario. But yes, people would think they're talking
no,
about
well, anyway,
Chaffinches.
Thank goodness they did, yeah, because this book, which is now, it's long out of print, but sells for incredible. We're always constantly having people say, you know, hundreds of pounds and dollars a copy or even more now. Anyway, the reason I'm saying it is, it was at that time, the awareness of the photographer and the writer who shot this book and produced it, an awareness that this perhaps was to be treasured this time. Because if you look through the book, and if you can get hold of a copy, believe me, your time will be well rewarded looking through it, aside from gorgeous women and all that. The photography and the words are just beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous.
I'm not going to turn down that opportunity, I've got to say, even though I was captured recently at the Lincoln Show with the Jive Fody team wearing a purple tutu, I will not...
I thought it was a pink tutu, Alex.
No, it was a purple tutu. Oh. It's you know, when Annette susses out how to use Facebook, should be able to show the photograph to Arthur and go say there. Yeah.
Listen, that should be instantly encased in a glass and put into the V&A, you know?
Yeah, well, it's a thought, you know, a purple tutu as worn by host of the Midwick Drive.
That's exactly it. You're in the main gallery right off the bat.
Jeez. Ed, do you have any questions for Arthur, or do you want to launch a competition?
Can I do both, or is that frightfully
Well, let's
greedy?
Ask Arthur. Arthur, in your capacity as producer and obviously contributor extraordinaire, do you mind if Ed launches details of a competition which we've been promoting for a family
not.
Ticket for the Waddington Air Show 2013? Go.
It's
no,
one of...
I would love to hear every word he says.
There's quite a few, Arthur, so you may regret saying that. It's one of the biggest events of the summer here in Lincoln, and Siren FM has got tickets that you could win. This year's Waddington International Air Show takes place on the 6th and 7th of July. And if you want a great family day out, we're giving away two sets of family tickets for the Sunday, courtesy of RAF Waddington. Each of those family tickets will be two adults and two children and is worth £57. And for your chance to win, just answer this question. Which anniversary of the Dambusters raid was celebrated this year? Which anniversary of the Dambusters raid was celebrated this year? So if you think you know the answer, head to sirenonline.co.uk to enter. The competition closes at 4 o'clock on Tuesday, the 2nd of July. That's the afternoon version of 4. We'll be contacting the two winners shortly afterwards to arrange a time for you to come to Siren FM to pick up your prize. And don't forget to tune in to Siren 107.3 over the air show weekend for some special shows with live coverage of the event. So just head to sirenonline.co.uk.
I think we get the message now, Ed. I don't want to edit over the whole thing here. Terms and conditions apply.
Voiceover
exactly.
Ends.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Hopefully you're still there, Arthur, which is all good. So actually exciting.
I am, and I was replaying that. I've seen that film a half dozen times. It is so good. It's incredible.
It is. The Dan
and
Busters.
What an event. What an event. I mean, for all time, Britain must always remember those people who did that. What an event they did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, incredible.
And a question, if I may, Arthur. In the voiceover that introduces your segment on the show, it says, prepare to be amazed. So we're often amazed by your thoughts, but I was wondering what you've been amazed by recently. We have a horrible text expression here, OMG, which people...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, for amazement. When was the last time you and Annette looked at each other and thought, my word, that's new?
I will tell you, it is as relevant and imminent as now, this moment, flashed across Annette's computer screen not many moments ago was the fact that on the last day of our Supreme Court, these nine people who dress in black robes and look like talking heads, and most everybody disagrees with, have finally done something this term. We had the Defense of Marriage Act here, which is that same-sex couples should be able to marry without interference by state or federal government. The southern states and Republicans have blocked this for years. Finally, the Supreme Court has come down on the side that people should be able to live the lives that they want to live without interference by anyone. So same-sex marriage has changed. That has amazed the both of us because we have so little faith in this country's intelligence.
I was going to say, I mean, isn't that a bit much for a country that sort of prides itself on civil liberties and freedom that they've actually gone ahead?
No, we pride ourselves. It's like the special relationship with England and America. As long as England does what America says, we have a special relationship.
You see, that's the way forward. Exact. Cultural domination. Ideology. Genius. Arthur, I figured we'd just shoot the breeze this month and not sort of focus on that because it's just a lot of fun to work through that.
I had a wonderful time.
Well, in fact, Jill, can you remember those last two questions for form's sake?
I can.
Go.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have, yes.
Good. And will you be joining us again in the future?
I certainly hope so and look forward to
it. Now, your task hasn't quite finished as yet, Arthur, because I'm going to put you in the sort of challenge of the musical lead-in to Annette, because obviously we can stay online, actually, you can just pass the phone over to Annette, but it's just fantastic. Well, I was going to take a brief musical break. Annette, would you like, because tomorrow we're featuring Den Stevenson, who's written a new musical, all coordinated with Glenn Miller, so we can offer you Boogie Woogie Company Boy, with, of course, from the musical Bugle Boy.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Or we could go Bon Jovi and What About Now. So where are you going to go?
No, I think we'll go the other one.
Okay. We'll get
the first one.
2 minutes, 46 seconds to compose, psych oneself up, and then we'll be having Annette Andre's monthly letter from upstate New York.
Okay.
We were chatting so much in betwixt the joys of company, Bugle Boy, etc. We actually forgot to line up Annette's ident. And obviously, if we don't actually press this button here...
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive with another audio letter from upstate New York.
The potential ramifications would be enormous. You know, it's bad enough, Annette, that you've got to deal with an Australian new prime minister and a changing prime minister there. But really, you know, if we didn't play your jingle, it'd be just not on at all. Really.
Frankly, I hardly know who's prime minister in Australia anymore.
Bless, I think you and many other Americans probably own exactly that routine. Basically, they won't understand about Julia Gillard and the rest of the things she's going and the new chap coming on board. It's a different line entirely.
I know.
which could serve as the basis of another audio missive, really, from upstate New York. But welcome back aboard the show, and it's nice to see you getting back together with Roger Moore again, and Roger's okayed stuff, and it's good news there as far as Facebook's concerned.
I've got
Sir Roger Moore, of course. I mean, it's a matter of time
before
we get
a special offer going on my website, actually, with Sir Roger, which is some photographs which are co-signed by him. Mm. So it's a special offer. People should get there. Already one of them is sold out. So
quality is always there. Cream shall always rise to the top. And the campaign starts now for Dame Annette Andre. I think we've got Dame Judi Dench.
How about that?
I think Dame Annette Andre, only a matter of time. What do you think, Jill?
I think definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, there we are.
Oh, well, there we are. I've got someone backing me.
I was thinking more Queen Annette Andre.
Oh, no, that's better.
Well,
I think that's better, probably. That's
something.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a thought. Annette, what is the topic this month?
Oh, this one is called Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Ah, fantastic. Do we have to wear red shoes to actually tap them together at the end and say there's no place like home?
Well, it wouldn't hurt, would it?
Okay.
I mean, you know, we can all put on a pair of red glittery shoes. Lovely.
Yeah, or a purple tutu. Just don't go there at this moment in time. Well, carry on. Yeah.
All right, shall I go?
I think so.
All right. Also, what would a man who called his girlfriend Oki and his dog Doki have in common with an obscure Brooklyn academic who spent 20 years struggling to decipher a language that died 3,000 years ago, and yours truly? Well, if this sounds like the start of a Shaggy Dog story, you're due for a refund. First off, what that man, Robert, believe it or not, Ripley, the woman, classics professor Alice Kober, and I share, is a lifelong consuming curiosity in the world beyond our borders. The prompt for this letter is the publication this month of biographies of Mr. Ripley and Professor Kober, and two more dissimilar characters never were conjured in the same breath. Retiring and virtually anonymous as the professor was, Robert Ripley, at the height of his celebrity from the 1920s through the 50s, was arguably the most famous name around the world. His cartoons and comic strips in hundreds of newspapers, the series of short films shown in movie theaters from Hackney to Nairobi, and his radio show broadcast from coast to coast in America, reached over 60 million fans devoted to his carnival-like obsession with the weird and exotic, the obscure and the improbable in a world that was just beyond the reach of wherever you lived. A typical cartoon under the blaring headline, Believe It or Not, would feature several of what Ripley called his queerosities. The drawing of a woman with a tongue forked like a serpent's. The skeleton of a fish a million years old that could only swim backwards. And for those who couldn't make it to the fairgrounds, an authentic reproduction of Sandosh, the two-headed boy from Samarkand. A cornucopia of shrunken heads, medieval chastity belts, and incredible examples of the impossible, such as the man who proved he could down a pint of arsenic without a care, made Ripley fabulously rich, but apparently could do little to overcome his unfortunate appearance. Short and rotund as a ball, with jagged teeth that some said rivaled Bela Lugosi at his leering best, Ripley, for all his bombast, was painfully shy and possessed some peculiar traits worthy of a mention in his own Believe It or Not column. One example, Ripley drew his cartoons completely starkers, except for wearing his mother's wedding ring. While Ripley was flitting all over the globe in search of new and incredible oddities to astound his vast audience, Alice Kober, an assistant professor of classics, was hunched night after night at her dining room table, chain-smoking, as she attempted to decipher an ancient language from the Greek island of Crete. A spinster who cared for a widowed mother, Kober taught Latin at Brooklyn College by day, and after the dinner dishes were washed, spent more than 20 years filling 180,000 index cards with attempt after attempt to learn the language of the peoples Homer wrote about, but history had forgotten. Like Sherlock Holmes deducing the obvious to none but himself, Kober was finally breaking into the code hidden in the strange markings on the hundreds of clay tablets found a half century before in an excavation of the Palace of Knossos. At last, a face was emerging of the people who, until Professor Kober's obsession to unmask them, were only shadows in the slow march of time. Naturally, like Rocky films, we're rooting for the underdog to have her day of glory and the years of lonely drudgery rewarded with nothing less than the Nobel Prize. But alas, nothing of the kind befell Professor Kober. She suddenly took ill at age 45 and died before completing her journey into the unknown, but not before leaving a precise formula for others to put the finishing touches to the language and daily life of peoples who had only been a myth before the spinster from Brooklyn took them on. I said at the outset of this letter that what I had in common with Robert Ripley and Professor Kober was a consuming curiosity in the world beyond my own growing up in Randwick, Australia. To a young girl who hungered to see the places and people she heard about on the radio, oh, this, of course, was the days before TV and the internet, Ripley's Believe It or Not feature, printed each Friday in the Sydney Morning Herald, was a magic carpet to exotic climes. I would discuss the queerosities Ripley served up with my parents, and was blessed that my father shared my hunger to discover what a questing life had to offer. Almost every weekend, he and I would go to museums and libraries, and on the tram home, exchange our thoughts on what we'd experienced. Today, of course, 5 minutes with Google puts you in touch with every part of the world and all its treasures. But for all that, I wouldn't trade those wonderful weekly excursions into the unknown that my father and Mr. Ripley afforded me, and has led to a lifelong pursuit of personal discovery. If you can keep and nurture an open mind, there's no limit to where it can take you. Robert Ripley traveled to over 200 countries on this planet to collect his menagerie of human existence. Professor Alice Coburn never left her dining table in Brooklyn to voyage 3,000 years back in time to present us with a world long misplaced. For me, they are living examples of what can only be thought of as links in the great chain of life. And, by the way, in case you're wondering what Professor Coburn discovered in those clay tablets, beside from unearthing a complex society that influenced the art and science of the ancient world, one of the first translations she did was certain to have resonated with Robert Ripley. A tablet recorded some of the names of men prominent in the Crete of the day. Among them was a wag, oh, no doubt the life of the party, who went by the moniker Having the Bare Bottom. Proof that funny things did happen to more than just me on the way to the forum.
Nice. I like that. Superb. And as ever, I mean, just proving you can coin a phrase like very few folk can. If you miss the live breathtaking transmission, believe it or not, you can download it for future thrills, southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. That's from the Annette Andre update on Facebook, which is wonderful. This is great. Robert, Believe It or Not, Ripley, a book which I think still sells in Waterstones, Jill.
Yes, that was my comment as you were speaking there. It's probably the biggest book we sell most Christmases is the Guinness Book of Records. Mm-hmm. But Ripley's right. Believe It or Not is not far behind. It's sort of the second most popular annual type books for grown-ups and for families that's still selling today.
I'm not surprised at that because, I mean, it's such that I actually went online to have a look at, again, remind me of some of the things, you know, and it's just amazing. I remember, I don't remember all, I remember the odd ones, but I just remember the sort of wonder at what he brought up and the idea of, oh, can you believe that or not? You know, it was just wonderful.
It's all down to perception. Ed, I know you've been saying frequently we should do the show in a state of déshabille and take all our clothes off, not while the web camera is on. I've said this time and time again.
Why not?
Do you know, I may have thought that, but I didn't realise I'd said it.
Yeah. Anyway, any questions?
I tell you what, I did. What really caught my ears there, Annette, was you read a line which said, if you can keep and nurture an open mind, there is no limit to where it can take you. And I thought, you know, that's pretty good advice, isn't it?
It is. You know, I mean, you cannot walk through life being blinkered and not wanting to look. It's just amazing. I'm always fascinated when I read, particularly when I read into the ancient world. When I was a kid, or sort of a kid, I suppose a teenager, I remember I used to go to the libraries a lot, my father and I loved going to the library instead of my mother, but we went more. And at one point, I became really interested in anthropology. And I would take out books on anthropology, and I really thought maybe that's what I would become. Unfortunately, the theatre took over, but still in all. It was wonderful opening these books, and I even tried to learn some hieroglyphics, I remember, at one point.
Annette, I'll provide you with your personalised Rosetta Stone, you know, to actually sort of decode all sorts of languages. It'd be marvellous.
I would treasure it.
Last two questions for Annette Andre, please. Ed!
Annette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Oh, yes, I have. Yes, it's been fun.
And to just add another one of your phrases, you talked about links in the great chain of life. So can we look forward to linking up with you and very connecting
nice,
shortly.
Nicely done, I bet.
Oh, that I liked very much, so I'll certainly say yes to that one.
Yes, come July, Annette André will return.
Yay!